Edema, where heaven and earth have met. Since the day our Blessed Mother visited her cousin Elizabeth, she has never stopped visiting her people and care for them in time of need, reminding them of the gospel of her Son. This happened in Guadalupe, Mexico, and then in Lourdes, France. Let us now hear what was the purpose and message of her visitation in Fatima on every 13th of the month from May to October in 1917. Here now is the director of Radio Maria Canada, Father George Amaro.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, to another episode about Fatima. It is the 37th episode, and we are dealing with the video, not so the audio, with what the little shepherds have seen, and so we are trying to conceptualize how, in human terms, can we explain that experience? It is very important to me, at least. It is very important. I'll try to be closest to science as possible, because the world outside, the cosmovision of this world, the way the ones in power look at reality, it's an agnostic look, it is an atheistic look. The world of universities, the world of politics, the world of mass media, the world of culture in general, it's atheistic, it's practical atheistic. Atheistic, and so we must fundament. We must reason. That's what already Saint Peter has said a long time ago. Reason your faith. Reason why you hope. You have to reason that to all people, and so we have to reason those things in human terms. Because otherwise, they just, if we come with unreasonable beliefs, like they understand all apparitions are, these things are from ignorant people, or as the Spaniards say, a todos los tontos se les aparece la Virgen, all mad people think they have seen the Virgin Mary, and they look at these things as unbalanced people. So we need to fundament all these visions in a way that they themselves can understand, and we have to be as close as possible to science, of course. You cannot demonstrate scientifically everything, but as close as possible we should be to science and try to explain in human, credible terms, plausible terms, reasonable terms, these sort of experiences. And so that's why I'm talking these episodes about the visual, the audio, which is the message that comes later. So let us divide so that we can understand what was the experience. The miracle of the sun was a visual thing. There were visions that the little shepherds were having at the time, as the people, the general public, the 70,000 people there were just looking at the sun and the dancing of the sun, the little shepherds were having another fun, looking at the celestial court, and they were having other visions, which we'll tell you about. So how can we envision all these? How can we explain all these visions? And then later we will go to the message. And for the message, then we will go to apparition by apparition, starting from the apparitions of the angel, that were three apparitions, and the angel was like the John the Baptist for Jesus. So it was the angel preparing the way to the Blessed Virgin Mary, and he prepared the way in a difficult manner, because as I've said, the apparitions of the angel were tough on the kids. They, as a matter of fact, they didn't, you know, the apparitions of Our Lady, they come out relaxed. And as you see, Jacinta comes out overjoyed. They come out relaxed. But the apparitions of the angel, they come out exhausted. As a matter of fact, they always went to the apparitions of Our Blessed Mother, apart from one. It's not that they didn't go, it's they were taken to prison. And then the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared to them in a different place, in Valinhos, not in Cova de Ria. He appeared to them in a different place, and not on the 13th, because on the 13th they were in prison. And interestingly, the Blessed Virgin Mary was coming, and they saw the signs that the general public were seeing. They saw them, but then all of a sudden nothing more happened, because the little shepherds were not there. They were in Oran. They were in. They were taken to prison. But the apparitions of the angel, they didn't want them. They didn't want them because they were exhausted by them. And as a matter of fact, they failed to come to the Valinhos for one apparition, and the angel caught them at the well of Lucia. That's one of the apparitions of the angel there. So we will be concerning about all the visions, what they have seen. And then in as far as the angel, interesting thing is that it coincides, it matches the angel of the Bible. Now, the angel of the Bible has no wings. This thing of representing the angels with wings is wrong. It's not in the Bible. The ones that have wings are the cherubims and the seraphims. The angels have no wings. As a matter of fact, when Lucia was telling this painter that he was painting the angel, and in painting the angel and the three shepherds, he painted an angel with wings, because that's the tradition, and that's the common understanding, that the angels have wings. But Lucia told him, well, this angel didn't have wings. This angel, they described him as like a teenager boy, dressed in tunic, and is described without wings. As a matter of fact, when you go and in the places where the angel appeared, you can see the angel there, a statue, a marble statue of the angel, and the kids. But you see no wings. Lately was then called this Angel of Portugal, which is a feast that we celebrate in the liturgical Catholic calendar in Portugal, the angel of Portugal. So to say, we have all a guardian angel, and this would be so the guardian angel of Portugal. Now, so what did they see? It is a private revelation. It is an apparition. I have defended it always that this is an apparition, not a vision. Although there are visions within the apparition. So there is this theory that the people that are auto-suggested to see things, they will see things. But that's not the case. That's not the case of the little shepherds. They were not posed to see anything. They were not waiting on anything. And that's the real reason behind the difference between vision and apparition. Vision, somehow you provoke it, is with assesses, and somehow is a movement from down up. But the apparition is a movement from up down. You don't provoke it. You are simply chosen, not that you chose yourself, that you do something in order to get an experience. So the experience is given to you freely. It's God that chose you. It's nothing that you do special. So it is not a vision, because a vision is always private, and it is an expression of deep religious experience without the public and without a message to others, although there are some visions that they have some message to others. Santa Faustina is one of them, messages of the Sacred Heart or Immaculate Heart of Mary. There are messages that there are visions, some visions that have some message to the wide public, but usually a vision is very private to the person. It doesn't involve anybody else. It's just the person. And so it's there is no public. And the apparitions is always for more people. Especially the Marian apparitions is always for more people. It's and there is a message to the public. Apparitions always have a prophetic. They are always prophetic. They are confined to specific place and specific time, like Fatima, Lourdes, and Guadalupe. The apparitions are for a specific time and a specific space, and there are witnesses from the very beginning, the general public. There is always a prophetic message for that time and place, and it's always accompanied by phenomena and miracles that do not have a scientific explanation. So, and that in all the three apparitions, there is this miracle. There are these things that can be explained, but there are other things that cannot be explained. And in both Fatima, Guadalupe, and Lourdes, there are many things that are not, that science has not managed to explain. They are there. They are exposed to the general public. Well, you have your own view, but science cannot explain certain phenomena. And so, but the important thing of the apparition is the prophetic message. You see, our Blessed Mother becomes a prophet. And those involved, those to whom she appears, they become little prophets. And these three became really prophets. Prophets of a message. A prophet is always a depositary of a message to the wide public. In Fatima, our Blessed Mother became a prophet for the whole 20th century, because One thing is when the prophecies were told, that is on 1917, but another thing is when the prophecies were accomplished, and that is the whole 20th century. The prophecies against militant atheism. She becomes, you know, you see, we have an incomplete vision of what our Blessed Mother is. We have this vision of our Blessed Mother that with opposed hands, like in Fatima, very humble, very quiet, very serene, very pacific, and so forth, and very silent. But this vision is incomplete. It's incomplete. It is also truth, but it is incomplete. Because this is the same woman that said that in the Magnificat, that send the rich away empty. He has given plenty to the poor, and the rich she sent away empty. The one that overthrows the powerful from their thrones. You know, a woman that says these things, I can only compare her to that woman leading the populace, leading the revolutionaries with a French flag, and leading the revolutionaries in the French Revolution. That woman with naked chest, leading the revolutionaries. That's the way I picture our Blessed Mother too. This is part of her. This is also part of her being a revolutionary woman. That also is already in her Magnificat, predicting the kingdom of God, with Jesus, society where there is more peace and where there is more justice. So this is our Blessed Mother too. So let us pause for a moment and continue about the prophetic role of our Blessed Mother. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. And we were saying that our Blessed Mother is a prophet, and these visitations are prophetic visitations, because she has a message to deliver, and this was Fatima was a message to deliver to the militant atheism, and to those that were militant about this way of understanding a reality that there is no God and there is no life beyond that. So when there is prophets always die. You know, Jesus was crying over Jerusalem, you kill the prophets, you kill those that tell you the truth because you don't want to listen to the truth. Any prophet is always in trouble. Look at the prophets closer to us, not just the ones of the Old Testament, ending up with Jesus. The way interesting, these disciples, Emmaus disciples, going from Jerusalem to Emmaus, that's the only account that we have how the disciples look at the death of Jesus. It was a prophet, powerful in words and in actions, and we even thought that he would be something more, that would be the Messiah, but now we are convinced that he was not, he was just killed. So they were very, very depressed, the disciples of Emmaus. And Jesus died as a prophet too. He died as a prophet for the things he did, the things he said, for truth and righteousness and for justice and peace. He died. And all the prophets closer to our times, Mahatma Gandhi, the prophet of nonviolence, Luther King, the prophet of equality between black and white. Nelson Mandela didn't die, but he spent over 30 years in prison, so we pay the price too. And then we have in this fascist Latin America, the time of fascism, we have in Salvador, Oscar Romero, the Bishop Oscar Romero, that mixed his own blood with the blood of Christ when he was celebrating the Eucharist and elevating the chalice, he was shot. So where there is prophetism, there is that. And even these little kids, well, too, died very early as they were taken to heaven, Jacinta and Francisco. But the three of them, they suffer for the message. You see, the prophet, a real prophet, suffers for his message. He pays the price for upholding it, for giving testimony to what God has told him to say or to do. And so they were threatened to be fried in oil. As a matter of fact, for them, they thought, you know, they were going one by one to the place where this oil pan was. First they take one. So the two others, they are kids. The two others that are there waiting, they think that the other one is already frying in oil. And then, without seeing him anything, then comes the second and then the third. You see, this is really torture. And they didn't give up. They didn't give up. If threatened to be fried in, you know, it would be an horrible death. Threatened to be fried in oil, they didn't give up. And they thought, you know, they thought that the first and the second, you know, the third one thought that the first and the second were already dead, and he was going to a certain death in his own mind. And they suffer like prophets. So this is the prophetic understanding of Fatima, because there is always, these apparitions are for something, even the apparitions of Jesus. The apparitions of Jesus, they are to start everything over again. Because a vision wouldn't be enough to take these disciples away from disbelief. They need to see, they need to touch something, like Thomas, they need to see something. They need to experience some inequivocal experience to take them away, because the ones were going to Emmaus, and Peter, we see in the gospel, "I'm going fishing," he says. So they were going back to their own business before, the apparitions of Jesus are real apparitions, and they come to infuse into them the faith. Our faith is apostolic faith because we believe in the experience of the apostles. But what the apostles have seen, nobody else has ever seen again. So the way I explain it is that Jesus even says to Mary Magdalene that don't hold on to me, because I haven't ascended into my Father. So Jesus kept a while being among us, although not in his physical body anymore, but in his spiritual body, in his glorious body. As a matter of fact, he comes into a place, into a room, and he doesn't need doors or windows, he just comes. So these experience the resurrected body of Jesus. It's different from the transfiguration. You see, in transfiguration is also, but is Jesus before that. So that's a vision. That's a vision. Because it's like, the way I understand it is like, if we had X-rays, if we could switch from normal eyes to eyes that see the bones, like X-rays in our eyes, if we could switch. So that's the way I understand the transfiguration. It's that all of a sudden God provoked their eyes to see within the physical body of Jesus, the transfigured body of Jesus, that is the risen body of Jesus, the aura of Jesus. That's a way of understanding it in this Far East philosophy. They saw the risen Lord, even before he died. They saw what belongs to Jesus, that is also his spiritual body. We have our spiritual body already now. We have our glorious body already now, but it's not seen because the physical body is taking its place. But then the glorious body and the spiritual body, which are the same thing, they will take place, the place of the physical body. That's what happened. So imagine in a vision, it's like they were seeing the physical body of Jesus in the Transfiguration in Mount Tabor. All of a sudden, their eyes could see the aura of Jesus. Their eyes could see the transfigured body, the spiritual body, or the glorious body of Jesus. That is a vision, but the resurrection is not a vision, is an apparition. He comes to them and in his glorious body, and nobody has ever seen him again. So we are working on the principle that the transfigured humanity of Jesus Christ, his glorious body, after his resurrection and ascension to heaven, never again appeared directly on earth in his corporeal reality like the apostles saw him. Never again. So this is, and I prefer, so this is it. That's why I question what St. Paul has seen, if it was a vision or it was an apparition. Could be an apparition, but a vision apparition, the way I understand it. It's Jesus was not there in his... it's an apparition very much like the ones of Fatima or the ones of Lourdes or Guadalupe. It's an apparition very much like ones, which I'm going to tell you. It's a divine hallucination, so that the real person is not there. But the real person provokes that vision in you, that that hallucination in you. So what is true for our Lord, it is true to his mother. So that his mother, the glorious body of Mary, the spiritual body of Mary, was never to be seen again after her Assumption. So in order to explain the fact that during the last apparition, that while the crowd's attention were captivated by the miracle of the sun, the little shepherd saw part of the celestial court, imagine each of their own way. Thus they saw Saint Joseph with the child Jesus in his arms, Our Lady of Sorrows, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, Jesus blessing the world. So they saw all these things, which you can look at it quite even, I could use the word ridiculous. How come we see at the same time Our Lady of Mount Carmel and then Our Lady of Sorrows, and then we see the baby Jesus in the arms of Joseph, his father, and then his adoptive father, and then we see the adult Jesus blessing the people. So these are visions. These are visions, and one comes after another. Visions within apparitions. So we reject the petty presumption that anything that is not natural or normal is therefore pathological. The genuines are not normal. Einstein is not normal, and yet he was not pathological. Beethoven, that at the age of 6 and 7, he could play piano, he could write music, that is not normal. But is not pathological either. So there are things beyond the normality, the real normality. So, as you know, the Church, before supporting any apparitions, the message is it in line with the gospel? First thing. Second thing, the seers are perfect, physical and mentally health, and the seers are honest and humble, and their lives are exemplary for the spiritual and moral point of view, and that all coincides with all the apparitions that the Church has approved. These three, this is true. The message is in line with the gospel. The seers are healthy physically and mentally, and their lives were completely changed, and they became saints. They were not saints, but the apparitions led them to become saints. So, hence, this is how we classify the experience of the little shepherds of Fatima: hallucination, because Our Lady did not actually and objectively appear. If she had indeed been there, then all those present would have seen her. Divine, it's hallucination, yes, but it is a divine because it was not provoked by any illness or mind or by any contemplation or by any effort from the little shepherds, since they were perfectly sound in mind and body, but rather by God, in order to pass through them a message for Portugal and for the rest of the world. So this is... it is an hallucination. Hallucination is a perception that occurs in the absence of the physical or corporeal of the object perceived. It's seen in the retina, but it's not there. You see, but as you see it in the retina, you see it looks like it is there, but it's only there for you. The 70,000 of people, they were not having. They were not seeing the Blessed Virgin Mary. Only the three shepherds were seeing her. So was not objectively there, but it was on their retina. They were really seeing. It was on the retina of the little shepherds, but it was not on the retina of the wild public. So only them had the experience. And of course, this is provoked by God. So it is similar to what occurs in nocturnal dreams, where the sensation of reality is so alive that is not only when we, it's only when we awake from the dream, wake up, that we realize that it was not real. But whilst we are living it, it's very real. The dreams look like reality. It's only then when we wake up that we see that was not real. Therefore, in the case of the seers of Fatima, they perceived the presence of Our Lady without her being really there, bodily present. So that is the supernatural. What about what is supernatural about this experience? The supernatural is that the reality that it is not the little shepherds who brought about this experience, but rather it was caused by God. This is the principal criteria for its authenticity. The children did not bring about experience. They did not seek it and have nothing to do to have it. They did nothing to have it. This is where the scope of the divine intervention is situated, as well as later in the content of the message, which in no way could have been invented by the children, given their condition of being rude and ignorant. And as the canon Father Mike Manuel Formigan called them. I do not mean this to be the final word on the subject. What makes me 100% certain that the children did experience something supernatural is that, in line with all people who have had divine encounters, it changed their life so radically and dramatically. They did not only see an apparition and heard a message, but they also lived and embodied that message for the rest of their lives. And so we stop today here, this program, about what they have seen. And of course, so it is a divine hallucination, let us conclude, a divine hallucination provoked by God. They, in their retina, they saw Our Blessed Mother standing in a tree. Was real Our Blessed Mother really standing in a tree? No, because if it was, the other people would have seen her. But it was in the retina, and the retina posed Our Blessed Mother on the top of that little tree. And so it's a divine hallucination, is an hallucination provoked by not by disease, but by God himself. So next episode, we will be talking about the vision of hell. What did they see? So I already conceptualized this vision. So of course, it's also again a divine hallucination, but what did they see? How did they perceive hell? That's what we will deal with in the next episode.
You have been listening to Fatima, Where Heaven and Earth Have Met, with Father George Amaro. Thank you for joining us today, and we pray that this program is an encouragement to you. Please join us here on Radio Maria Canada, where Father George Amaro will continue his teaching about Our Blessed Mother and the significance of Fatima.